good day, good night, and welcome to World Cup Today. Belgium and Tunisia just wrapped up, and we got ourselves a blowout this morning. Belgium looking good, and you know what, Dwayne, over the last few months, it was rumored, and a lot of people were giving Roberto Martinez some flack for the performance of Belgium in friendlies and in qualification. Well, I guess it's okay. I guess Belgium are okay.
They are okay, and I'm just coming from you live from a pre-wedding brunch that I'm at. So if you hear any noise in the background, that's just the revelers here on a beautiful rainy Pride weekend in Toronto. But that was a marker, no doubt about it. 5-5-2. I mean, forget that second goal. Forget any of the two goals. That was all about Belgium's ability to finish. And if you could finish in this tournament, because we've seen a lot of good performances by good teams where, you know, it's been a low scoring affair, but you know, that was a marker. This is the first time that I've looked at Belgium in the last few years and went, okay, yeah, they could win.
Yeah, they can win the World Cup. If Eden Hazard, Lukaku can do this every game, you score 4 goals every game, 2 each, you got yourself a winning team. And Batman, of course, Michy Batshuayi, getting his goal late in this game. And you're right, let's not talk about the two goals by Tunisia, even though the third goal of the game when it was 2-1, kind of changed the dynamic, but you can tell that Belgium were not even worried. Like, okay, you guys scored one, it's all good. Well, we'll continue to press then. We'll continue to push. And they did.
No doubt. And I'm going to make an absolute guarantee here. If Belgium scores 4 goals every game for the rest of this World Cup, they will win the World Cup. No, yeah, dominant performance. I mean, you know, the only caveat I'll give is that it's Tunisia, obviously, and they were missing a couple key defenders in this match. But at the same time, you got to punish teams when you have vulnerabilities, and they did. And there's been other teams in this World Cup that haven't been able to punish teams at the same level as Belgium did today. Just an absolute clinic that they really put on, and we all know that their top end talent is there. You know, maybe we do want to talk about those two goals a little bit, because maybe that might be the one vulnerability. Can they defend well enough to beat, you know, one of the top teams in this World Cup when the time comes in the round of 16, round of 8, whatever?
Yeah.
You know, we'll see. But this is with that top, De Bruyne or Hazard. My God, what a team! What a club! They're not a club, but you know what I mean. What a team!
And when Thomas Meunier gets the ball, the defender's like, all right, you know what, I'm just going to go for it. Then he finds Lukaku, and Lukaku finishes it off beautifully. So, yeah, you're right. This team can be impressive. And the way the players play with each other, and we talk often about chemistry in a World Cup, that at the beginning of the group stage, it's not always easy to find that chemistry. Look at the amount of goals that Belgium scored. Chemistry is there, and I'm not surprised, because if you look at the players where they play, a lot of them play in England, right? Yes, you have Meunier plays for PSG, but look at even Batshuayi plays in Germany for Dortmund now, but he's a Chelsea player, right? He just finished playing with Chelsea, with Hazard. They know each other. Lukaku plays Manchester United. You have De Bruyne, of course, plays for Manchester City. You have a certain amount of same style of play, or same instincts that they do have in the Premier League, and you see the correlation. When you see other teams play, like Victor Moses, example, for Nigeria, that played a great performance yesterday, but he plays in a similar style. The other players are not used to his wing-back type of run. So when I look at Belgium and I see them play with such a chemistry already that early in this tournament, it bodes well.
No, absolutely. So what you're saying then, Kevin, is that Belgium is the English Premier League team that England wished it could create? Yeah, and we're going to see that play out in a minute. No.
pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, it's thank you for the English Premier League for creating Belgium. I'm sure that'll play well in England. But, absolutely. It's all hyperbole in some ways. There's not much more to say. It was just a dominant performance from top to finish. The first game, I wasn't sure about them, to be honest. They got the win, but they didn't look necessarily that dominant. So today was just another level, though, and it was something to behold, and absolutely got to consider them among the favorites now.
Yeah, absolutely, and that Belgium-England game is going to be fascinating, and it doesn't mean anything for Belgium. Belgium is already qualified for the round of 16 with their win today, and we'll see with England tomorrow. If England can get the result tomorrow, then it doesn't mean anything as well for England, and that's maybe a positive as well, because you want England to get out tomorrow and be able to get that win so that the biggest game of the group for you is you can rest players. Because, yeah, and you mentioned Tunisia and how not lucky they have been with injuries. I've seen the stretcher three times before the 45 minute in the two games Tunisia played, the one against England and the one against Belgium. So, no, not lucky for Tunisia when you have a team that's not that deep to begin with and you lose your best defenders and midfielders. Yeah, it doesn't bode well.
No, absolutely. I mean, that's the difference between the top teams in the world and the rest, is that level of depth. I mean, there's a lot of teams that can put 11 out that are pretty decent, but the ability to put 20 on a roster that can all play at that same level is really the difference. And look, Tunisia didn't add much really to the affair today, to be honest, but as I said, there are factors to it. And this is the only caveat I have with it when I think about this, is honestly, not to be English-centric, but I'm watching this going, what does this say about England? Because England huffed and puffed and found a way, but it took a last-minute goal by Harry Kane for them to get that win. And meanwhile, Belgium just sort of strutted their way to this result. 1+1 doesn't always equal 2 in the World Cup, but if you're England, you hope it doesn't.
The thing is, for Belgium, is the first time since 2002 that they scored a goal before the first half in the World Cup. They have been known to score late into games and not having this breakthrough performance right off the bat, and they had that this morning against Tunisia. So it's a positive. But like you mentioned, there's not a lot more we can say with this game. Tomorrow morning, we'll see Panama and England to wrap up Group G, and we'll have more of certainty of if England does qualify or not after tomorrow. And this is the best way for England, right? Because when we looked at the England group, like Belgium, Panama, and Tunisia, like, okay, there's clearly two top teams here, but the schedule matters, right? The order of games matter. Can you imagine if you're England and you start with Belgium instead of finishing with Belgium? And just using this as an example, it's good for pretty much every other group. I'll talk about Argentina. Argentina feels bad just about it, but they might be lucky. But that's the idea. The order of the group games matter. If you're England or if you're Belgium, you start with England, it works for both ways. If you lose your first game, you're running after points. Now those two teams got the points and they can move on and build confidence. And it's an example. Those games truly matter. And if you're Belgium, you test yourself against, not minnows, but yeah, two smaller nations. Then you beat England, example. You're got yourself a lot of confidence heading into the round of 16. So I do feel that the order of games does matter.
No, well, for sure. And that game is going to be very interesting in terms of what it means for the round of 16, because Germany lost to Mexico. So that means that they're on the opposite side of the draw now. So you have to wonder whether those teams might not necessarily want to win the group, but of course they will. And that's, you can't play games like that if you're going to win a World Cup. You just have to win beat everyone in front of you. But it does set up an interesting scenario, because in the past, the second team out of this group lined up with Germany in the quarterfinals. Now it's the opposite. So. That's on the Germans, though. We'll see later whether they can live up to that. Maybe they'll pull in Argentina, and we don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, exactly. That could be interesting. Let's move on to yesterday afternoon's game. Let's start with the 2 p.m. game yesterday. Fun, entertaining, nonstop back-and-forth game that saw Switzerland come from behind, the first come-from-behind win in this World Cup, in the history of Switzerland as well in the World Cup. Switzerland 2, Serbia 1. Yeah, that goal from Xhaka was a beauty.
Oh, yeah. And what a second half by Switzerland. The first half was kind of even and sputtering and whatever, but that second half was completely dominant. And I've watched Switzerland play quite a bit through the years, and although I respect them because they tend to, do exactly what they're supposed to, I've never actually been impressed by them in a true way until the second half of that game yesterday, which was highly entertaining and highly impressive by the Swiss, who just looks phenomenal against the Serbia team that up until that point was, set to qualify, basically, had they got the win. So
again, the game matters. And I think it has to do with, I was watching the TSN coverage, so Christian Jack, our friend Christian Jack, that we had on the show a few times, Christian was mentioning that the order does play a role. And in this game, it did too. Look at the composition of this group, right? You have Serbia, Switzerland, Brazil, and what's the other team? Which team Brazil beat in the morning? I forget. Anyways, you can help me if you have the four team in your mind.
I'm blanking as well. Yeah, they beat the Costa Rica.
Costa Rica is the team that I forget. So Costa Rica, Switzerland, Serbia, and Brazil. Okay, it started Brazil, Switzerland. So if you're Switzerland, you're like, okay, we're starting against Brazil. If we have a result, great. If we lose, we still got two games and we fancy our chances in the other two games. So we don't have a lot of pressure. And if we get a result there, we can get another result there. And we have a feeling that we can beat Costa Rica anyways. So that's how they were thinking. If you're Serbia, you start off with Costa Rica. Like, okay, we can get a win. Then with Serbia, and then we play Switzerland. They could not afford just a draw against Switzerland if you're Serbia, because you're playing Brazil. You have already in your mind a defeat in the third game, because you're not going to play that well against Brazil. That's the idea behind how they played yesterday, because at the 1-1, they were pushing for the win. They were wanting to win. They were wanting to get the 3 points so they would qualify outright, and it cost them the game, but they could not be satisfied with 1 point because their next game is Brazil. If you're Switzerland, it's the exact opposite. You start off with the hardest game of the tournament for you in the group stage, and then you have Serbia, and they did fancy their chances, and they were patient and got the opportunities and scored the goals that they needed to with a great run by Shaqiri, who, that's experience, right? Experience and soccer IQ to recognize the space that was opening, just went on an amazing run. The service was there, and he finished off the great run. But yeah, that's Switzerland recognizing that they don't need to push. Serbia needed to push for the win. Serbia opened up. It left the exact good amount of space for Shaqiri to go on that run and to hulk up and to score that goal. But that's again, it's the games. It's the order of the games and the pressure of knowing you're facing Brazil in the third game and needing the result in that second one.
Well, it's also probably experience at this level. I mean, Serbia's at their first, I think it's their first World Cup anyway. Yeah, first for a while, if not. And Switzerland, you know, a consistent performer at all these European championships, major championships, Euros, the World Cups, they're always there. They're always Switzerland. They're always just there. So it's a bit of an experience of them, you know, understanding that you've got to compete every game and you can't just assume anything. And they didn't assume anything in the first game and they got a result against Brazil. So Serbia, meanwhile, is like, oh, we got Brazil, big bad Brazil in the future. They're opening up, as you say, whereas a point probably would have been okay for them. Because I've watched Brazil play a couple games in this tournament, and they huffed and puffed and found their way home against Costa Rica. There's no reason for Serbia to truly believe that they couldn't find a way to get something against them. Obviously, it would be an amazing result for them, but just giving that up, just opening up and assuming it's not something you can do. Whereas Switzerland, as I said, in that game against Brazil, they just went, okay, well, this is a player game. And if Brazil's it, then so what? We continue. We got two more to play. And that, you know, sort of confidence / experience resulted in a point for them. And now they're really sitting pretty. I mean, I have a hard time seeing Costa Rica getting a result against that team because they looked great in the second half. They looked, you know, we've been joking all tournament that Switzerland, you know, they're just there. They're going to get to round 60 and then get eliminated. I watched that second half, and now I'm like, maybe they can get a run now.
And,
you never know.
What about Zamali, former Montreal Impact player? You know what? He looked great, too. I like to see him play. And full disclosure, I never blamed the guy. I never disliked the guy for wanting to leave MLS. You know, sometimes you have to be honest with what you recognize and what you see with your own eyes and what you experience on the field, and knowing it's not necessarily beneficial for the rest of your career, and you have to act on it. Is it a bit selfish? Maybe. Would he be playing at the World Cup if we'd have stayed in Montreal? Probably not.
Yeah, well, that's always the debate. I mean, a lot of countries will dismiss MLS experience. So certainly, you know, two former Impacts played started in the World Cup yesterday. So it is a small small world, nonetheless. No, yeah, Zamali looked good. I saw jokes, people knowing, MLS people going, I know how to pronounce his name. That was kind of
I know that guy and Venegas. I know those two guys. Yeah, I know exactly. All right, let's move to the clock has hit midnight. Dwayne, yesterday at 1 p.m., well, it wasn't 1 p.m., it was midnight. Carriage turned back into a pumpkin. The slipper, well, the nice shoe, the glass shoe, turned back into a slipper. And Cinderella has its defeat at the World Cup. Nigeria 2, Iceland 0.
I was about to make a joke about there was a glass slipper broken on the sidewalk in front of me, but you beat me to it. Yeah, no. I thought Nigeria was full measure, but Nigeria didn't look great in that first game.
No.
So we were kind of dismissing the possibility, and I thought Iceland started the game well, but as the game continued, sort of the creative top-end talent took over, and Nigeria was full measure to get that win. And Iceland, great story. Great story. That's all I'll say.
What was that tweet, Dwight? The made-for-TV movie will be way more entertaining than just watching 90 minutes of Iceland play. Because the results are fun. The claps are fun. The atmosphere is great. Like, 20% of their population is in the stadium. But the play's terrible. It's grinding out results. And in this case,
I don't blame them for it.
No, I would do the same.
Yeah, if Canada was there, I'd be like, perk that bus. You go, guys. But yeah, no, it's not that entertaining for neutral to watch. And I'm not going to lie. I mean, as much as I like a good narrative, a good story, and I wouldn't have been unhappy had Iceland overachieved and got that result yesterday, I would have applauded them and said, good for you guys. But at the same time, I'm kind of happy Nigeria got the result because I also just like to watch good football. And with all due respect to what is, again, a great story, that was maybe the worst game of the World Cup that I watched. It was everything to just get through.
It was. When you know that Luke Wildman, Stephen Caldwell, and Christian Jack are not excited about a game, and they're telling it it's atrocious, have you ever seen Stephen Caldwell play? So for him to say that a game is boring is boring. And that was pretty much the vibe of everyone watching that first half especially. But Nigeria, Iheanacho, Moses... He got himself some top-hand talent and a lot of speed, a lot of pace and energy in this team. They're going to give Argentina a run for their money, aren't they?
They very well could. I mean, Argentina was the big winner yesterday based on that result, to be honest. I mean, now you're looking at these results and it's not that absurd that Argentina can get through. And that would be, talk about not karma. That would be, if they find a way. But, I think I came away with two things. Like, I'm pretty high on Croatia, that everyone knows that listens to this. So I came away saying that this bodes well on them because of the way that they handled Nigeria in that first game. And Nigeria looked very good against Iceland, and Argentina sputtered with them. But we don't know what the hell's going on with Argentina. So this is a fascinating group in many ways. And the final group day is going to play out very interesting because Croatia, they could probably show up hammered and win the group because they have a +5 goal differential right now. They would really have to lose on a sideways score for that to go away. But the rest of this group is wide open in terms of getting the second team. I mean, Iceland gets the result, they're in. Argentina gets the result, they're in.
Nigeria beats Argentina, Nigeria's in.
Yeah, it's wide open. And you can't ask for anything more as a neutral, but it is certainly fascinating. And right now, if I was a betting man, and I sometimes am, I think Nigeria's got the inside edge to get that second seed because I just don't believe that Argentina is not going to be a complete what when they show up for that third game.
Well, especially with what has happened since that game, right? There's when the Argentina Football Association needs to make a press release that Jorge Sampaoli will be managing the third game of the group. Things are not going well. When you actually have to say that you haven't fired your manager yet. Yeah, you know things are not well. And it's been rumored already that after this World Cup, however it ends, doesn't matter, that Di Maria, Aguero, Higuain, Messi, and a few others will announce their international retirement.
Again, so
yes, again for Messi.
The Argentine Federation is a mess. And I think people need to know that, and I think that this team is a reflection of that. And we talked about this a little bit a couple of years ago, and then sort of just, whatever, it goes on, and they play, and they find their way into the World Cup, and we kind of forget about it. But there's a lot of incompetence in that federation at the top end, and I think this is just playing out. And these players, they look disjointed, and that has to reflect. That has to reflect the top. It has to reflect the manager. It has to reflect the federation. They're all playing for themselves. No one is. There's no unified communication there. It's a bloody mess. And it's in front of them now, right? Like, they beat Nigeria, they probably go through. You assume Iceland's not going to beat Croatia because I think Croatia's quite good and Iceland is a good story. But I just don't see it happening, even though the talent's there. Obviously, the talent's there. It's hard to see this team suddenly and then in 4 days going, okay, let's play now. Let's figure this out. It doesn't seem like it's going to happen.
All right, let's preview a bit of the games that we'll review tomorrow. In tomorrow's show, we have two games left for today. Mexico-Korea. Mexico has been one of the teams that impressed us the most so far in this World Cup with their great victory over Germany, 1-0. Now, facing Korea, Mexico-Korea, I think this will be a party for the mariachis.
It should be. I mean, I don't think this is probably the weakest South Korea team in about a generation. So the way that they played against Germany was so, to me, it's still the most impressive single game performance of this tournament, simply because Mexico just went out and played with the Germans and got the result. So, you know, they've got to step it up and they've got to perform against a team that I think is weaker than them. But absolutely, I'm fascinated to watch this one in about 30 minutes from when we record this. It's going to be a very interesting game. And you know, if they get the result, they're through pretty much at this point. And that's all that you could have dreamed of heading in if you're a Mexican fan.
And this afternoon we have as well Germany-Sweden. Let's not sleep on Sweden. Like, Sweden beat Korea. We were expecting this. But if Germany doesn't get his act together quick enough, Sweden defensively, they're solid. And they can find an opportunity for goal or two. And if they're clinical and they're finished like they were against Korea, well, you can find yourself with Germany having another difficult game depending on how they react to their first game and a loss to Mexico. And let's not forget, this is the defending champions, yes. But this Germany team is not the same Germany team as 4 years ago. A lot of new players, a lot of changes, and a lot of players in their first World Cup. The level of experience, yes, at certain amount of players like Mueller and company is high. But this is not the case for the entire squad.
No, and I think we're going to get a real good measure on where exactly this World Cup stands after this game versus Sweden. I mean, we all sort of just, what's the joke? What's the definition of a soccer tournament? You know, 11 guys chase the ball, and 11 guys in short pants chase the ball, and Germany won.
And penalties.
Well, yeah, well, here we go. But this is it today. Like, this is probably the biggest measure game of this entire World Cup so far, because Germany, because of the loss to Mexico, is in fact in trouble if they don't get the full 3 points today. But if they do get the full 3 points today, then suddenly the bracket is wide open, because they're on the opposite side that we all thought. And
yeah,
that's going to make for an interesting play out in the knockout round.
Then if you're like, let me guess, let me just take a quick look and I'll tell you right now. So if you're England, you're happy, because if it was going to go chalk, you're going to get Germany in the quarters. If you're Brazil, you're not happy, because the runner-up of Group F, which could be Germany, will face the winner of Group E, which is going to be Brazil. So if you're Germany and you finish second in your group, you're facing Brazil in the round of 16. Yeah, that's a bit of a shocker. No one wants to see Brazil or Germany being eliminated in the round of 16. But if Germany finishes second in group F, this is what's going to happen.
Assuming Brazil wins the group, yes, for sure. Well, no one wants to see that except for the other teams that are contenders.
Yeah, like France. France would be really happy with that, because if Germany finishes second, it finds itself in the same bracket of France on that side. So you're going to have to see France in there. But if you're Brazil, Germany, and you're on a 16, at least you take one of those, and you're going to have a Brazil, Belgium probably, with the winner of Brazil or Germany for the quarters. France and Portugal, in my mind, but the way it looks, is pretty much that too, in the quarters. So that would leave for Brazil, Germany, Belgium, three out of the four teams in that bracket. So it's going to be a crazy knockout stage if Germany finishes second in the group.
Absolutely. And just before I forget, I want to give a shout out to the guy that just passed me wearing a Canadian jersey. So
nice.
Heads tip to you, sir. Anyway,
did you know him? Did you say hello or something? Did you wave?
Well, I always assume I do when I see them. But yeah.
You're like, hey, we know each other probably. You have to know us. Come on.
Yeah, you know Jamie? That's kind of what I do. No,
you
no.
Know,
anyway,
Jamie,
hat tip to whoever you are, sir. It's probably a listener.
Hopefully.
Maybe even a Patreon.
You never know. You never know. It's always good to meet Patreons. And I did last England game. Let's finish there tomorrow morning. England, Panama. Any surprises? Are you feeling confident with England? Are you feeling confident that they can get another 3 points and have 6 points after two games in a World Cup for the first time in a while?
Maybe. No, they should win. Yeah, absolutely. If I was a complete neutral evaluating this, there is no reason to think Panama can do anything. Panama, you know, 1A, 1B with Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia had a good second game with the weakest team in this tournament. So there is absolutely no excuse for England not to get the full 3 points tomorrow, and in fact, maybe even resting some of their players to do so. And that would be an ideal situation for them. So, but it's England, and they do have a history. They do have a lot of pressure on them. That's part of that history. So we'll see. But no, I do expect a full result tomorrow for England.
Before we wrap the show, Dwayne, I want to touch on a subject that we touched yesterday. It's about Russia and their performance in running in this World Cup. Just go to Dwayne's Twitter feed or my Twitter feed or the Soccer Today ESPN. You'll find a few graphics and a few. James Harati, who's a journalist and did some great research online with FIFA's own numbers. This is FIFA.com numbers that anyone can go see. It's about distance covered, the time, and the differences between games, not those games here, but games prior, other games, games in the past, other games that have been played, and this game's in the World Cup, and those numbers are all put together and analyze versus each other, and pretty much every single team does fall into the margin of error of 1.25, saying usually their performances doesn't vary more than 1.25% of what they were before, saying yes, World Cup, you give a second, third effort, you might run a little bit, you might be able to exert your body a little more, which would explain a 30% maybe output more than usually find. But not 2.4 and not 2.75 off what normal performances are, and that's what we're talking about here for Russia. So they're literally using their bodies cardiovascularly 225% difference from other games played in the past for the Russian national team. Just saying.
Yeah, just saying. The right way to put it. I mean, just putting it out there. I'm just saying. I mean, look, there's no way to prove anything when it comes to this stuff, but you can look at the history of this country and what they did in Sochi, and you can go, hey, you made your bet. You deserve the suspicion, and here we are. I mean, I still think that, as we said in the pre-tournament previews, that you can't put skill in a bottle. You can't put skill in a needle, and it ultimately will be what bites them. So we'll watch this Uruguay game, who is a more talented team that has not looked great so far in this World Cup, and we'll see whether there continues to be the same trend, because at this point it's just two games. So, and maybe the inspiration of playing at home is playing a role. Maybe they're excited. Maybe that explains it. Who knows? But
to a 30% level, fine. 200? Maybe not. And that's where I'm just saying, raising a red flag here. From someone with experience, it's been 6 years now we cover Olympics and international events and soccer and doping. And yeah, we've seen numbers. We've seen baselines. We've seen red flags and smoking gun. Right now, those graphics are a smoking gun for me, and I'm raising the red flag, and I'm saying this looks like an outlier. This does not look right. If this was a biological passport, this will raise suspicion, and right now I'm raising suspicion.
Fair enough. I mean, as I said, they made their bet. If this was a country that didn't have a history of doping, then you might be able to more easily flip it off, but because this is a nation that doesn't just have a history of doping, they kind of are doping. You have to raise an eyebrow. There's no doubt about it.
Exactly. All right. As always, you can follow Dwayne on Twitter at 24th Minute and myself at Kev Larmy. This show is brought to you by sportsinspired.ca. Clothing inspired by greatness. We'll be back tomorrow after the England game to break down this great victory by the England national team. Maybe, hopefully, Dele Alli not playing, but Rashford will be playing. Sterling might not be playing, but that's fine. Loftus-Cheek will. And The future continues for the England national team. As always, we'll be back tomorrow at 10 a.m. And until then, have a great soccer.